Well, I can remember very vividly 50 years ago. I can remember when we lived in St. Augustine, Florida. I remember where the colored-only water fountains, I remember the colored-only bathroom counters. I remember my mother telling me that I could not sit down at the lunch counters in Woolworths because they did not serve us because of our color. I was young, but very distraught because I could not understand how discrimination existed because of someone's color. And I questioned my parents a great deal when I was a teenager in terms of the injustices. Why does this happen? What do we have to do? And my mother said to me, I can remember, she says, well, I pray that one day that you will live long enough to see some changes. And I can thankfully say that I live long enough to see some changes. Are we where we need to be? Absolutely not. And I think that because of the fact that we have an African-American president, so many felt that things would rapidly change. And I was not that naive because I knew that some of those who perhaps were Ku Klux Klan at that time, some of their grandchildren and great-grandchildren may still be around, and they may not wear the white robes, but they wear suits now. They still have some vestiges of racism that still is in their craw. So I think it's quite apparent that progress has been made, but we're nowhere near where we ought to be.
What do you remember of the March on Washington? Because you were saying before, although you weren't in D.C. yourself, your father made sure that you and your family watched it on TV.
Oh, yes, we watched every bit of it. I remember the speech because it just resonated, not just that 50 years ago, but all 50 years. Some aspect of that speech I have said throughout my life. I just thought that Martin Luther King was just so brilliant in what he said, and that one day that we will be known not by the color of our skin, but by our character. And my dad just gave us a lesson of history after we looked at that march and said that things would improve, but always somebody had to sacrifice something in order to see improvement. And I saw that he was absolutely right with that. It just does not happen. There has to be someone out there fighting for the rights of those who are disenfranchised.
Now tell me about your involvement in the integration of Gainesville High School.
In 1964, which was 10 years after Brown versus Board of Education, the school system of Alachua County was still segregated. So the NAACP filed a suit against the Alachua County school system, and the NAACP won the suit, and the judge indicated that they had to integrate with all deliberate speed. My daddy then set out to find a 10th, 11th, and a 12th grader so that there would be somebody graduating each year from Gainesville High School. He knocked on about 500 or 600 doors. He was able to find a 10th grader and 11th grader. I was in the 12th grade, and he could not find someone who was willing to transfer their senior year and go to the all-white school. So I just told him, after we talked about it, that I was willing to be that senior. So I transferred my senior year and went to Gainesville High School.
What was that like walking into the school that first day? Did you feel apprehensive about doing that?
Well, the FBI came to our house and told us that that was not a good idea. That Gainesville was not ready for that, and they had not done any training. And my dad told them that they would never be ready. So that first day, my dad took all three of us, the 10th, 11th, and the 12th graders. In fact, he took us every day to school. And we were escorted by Gainesville police, one in front, one in back. And when we got there, Dad had prayer for us and told us to have a great day. And I knew from that first day that it was going to be living hell for that year. Mm-hmm. And that was in 1964, and that's still the worst year of my life. It was terrible. Every day I was called names. I was spit on every day. I was told that nobody asked me to come there. When I first went in my first class, I went on the front row to the first seat. And then everybody else in the class got up. And the teacher asked, "Why are you standing up?" And the students said in unison, "We'd rather stand than sit by a nigger." So she said, "You don't have to sit down, you can stand up." So I knew then that it was going to be a difficult year. Every time I would go to a class, I would have to check my seat because they would bring tacks and roaches and lizards and snakes and all sorts of things that were dead, put them in my seat, put them under my seat. So I just got in the habit of checking it because it happened every day. If I go to the lunchroom, everybody would leave. If I go to the library, everybody would leave. The Gainesville police told my father that we could not go into any extracurricular activities, no football games or basketball games, no prom, no senior trip, because they could not guarantee our safety. So the last year of high school, which is supposed to be a great year, was, in fact, the worst year of the 12 that I had in high school.
I guess you volunteered for it, but you must have felt a little bit of pressure to, you know, stand up and be counted. Was that kind of tough for you, having to go back and you know, do your father proud and make sure you got through that year of school?
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough experience. I mean, I had an experience when they beat me up, and I went home and said I wasn't going back, and stayed home for about 3 or 4 days and decided I was going back because I was not going to let them win their experience and me being there. But my dad and my mother talked to me about it before I went to the school. My mother was adamantly opposed to me doing such, merely because she had lost two jobs and because of my dad's activities, and felt that she would probably lose the third job because of what he was doing. So she was, and she just felt that my life was in danger. Mm-hmm. But I just told, and after talking to Dad, we talked about the pros and talked about the cons and talked about the danger involved, I just had decided that somebody has to be able to sacrifice in order for progress to be made. And I had made up my mind that I was going to get through that year, and I was going to make the sacrifice.
Do you think, having seen Dr. King's speech on the Washington Mall the year before, did that sort of have any influence on the way you decided to go through that year yourself?
Yes, I mean, that speech highly motivated me, because I'm saying he's putting himself out there. He has 4 small children, and he has a cause that he's willing to die for, which ultimately he did. There needs to be some other somewhere that understand that progress has to be made, and you have to have something you're willing to die for.
When you go to this commemoration at City Hall and when you see that replay of the speech, what do you think is going to go through your mind?
Well, I think I'm going to rewind my mental VCR and just capture the last 50 years in terms of the progress that has been made and places where we need to be, think about all of the heroes and sheroes that are responsible for the progress that we have made, and kind of map out in my mind a blueprint of what I think the next 50 years would be like, even though I will not be here, but just to do some reflection on that as well.
And you'll be no doubt watching President Obama's speech when he makes that address at the commemoration on the National Mall in Washington too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, I've already, my husband has already set the, not VCR, the T-Vote, so that we'll be able to see it again when we get home.